The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Hey, this is Dr. Z, host for this afternoon or evening or wherever you are. And we're really excited to bring you another wonderful program where we give you news, opinion, all kinds of interesting information about health, wellness, and issues in alternative medicine today. And today, I have a long-time friend on the line, I hope. And we have John Weeks from the integratorblog.com. And John Weeks is a publisher, editor. John has a long history of being involved in alternative and complementary and naturopathic medicine. I remember going to be a student at Bastyr University, and we always had great conversations on what was going on with what I call the politics of integrated and holistic health care. John, are you there?
I am here, Dr. Z. It's a pleasure to be on with you and to remember back to those many years ago when we met in Bastyr.
Yeah. I remember a lot of dances at and a lot of fun parties, too. It's great to have you on, that's for sure.
No one has ever criticized your profession for an inability to shake a leg.
Thank you very much. So, boy, a lot's happened since 20 years ago I graduated. Actually, celebrated 20 years this year. Lots happened, certainly, since I was at Bastyr, and you were also involved with Bastyr, doing all kinds of networking, fundraising, helping us with the licensing laws and all the things that you did for us back then. So why don't you give me a synopsis of what you've done in the last bunch of years and your main work and how you came up with the Integrator blog?
Okay, thank you. I kind of got my christening in these fields during the decade of 83 to 93, working deeply with your profession. You know, I left Bastyr and then was the executive director of the AANP for 4 years, the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians. But since 93, I ended up in this kind of emerging larger conversation nationally that developed when, as you know, David Eisenberg published that landmark study and surprised many large stakeholders in U.S. healthcare with what a high percentage of adult Americans were using some form of unconventional therapies, as he was analyzing at that time. So I've had an opportunity in the ensuing 17 years to consult with virtually every one of the mainstream stakeholders, from employers to insurers to academic medical centers to hospitals to political interests, on what they could do with and what should do once they learned that, in fact, the consumers had already moved so strongly into use of these providers and therapies, kind of way under the radar. It's been a utterly fascinating process. Frustrating, I find that I continuously have a double sense about what's gone on since 93, and certainly since the time we met Dr. Z. One side of it is a frustration that we haven't moved things further towards a kind of approach to medicine, to healthcare and healing that focuses more deeply on partnership with the patient, focuses on using the least invasive things first. There's a long way we have to go to really have a wellness-focused system here. At the same time, one can turn around and just list off all the tremendous changes in a world which truly in the last 20 years has begun to respect, include, and figure out how to deal with and work with natural therapeutics, when 20 years ago we were still in a dialogue around fraud and quackery, inappropriately, but still that was the way it was framed.
Yeah, I know. It was funny. I published several books since I graduated, and so, you know, one of them is on arthritis, the alternative medicine definitive guide. And I was reading a couple of days ago. I was cleaning out some closets, and this junk fell on my fell on my lap, literally. And there it was from the Arthritis Foundation, all of their quackery brochures. And I kind of looked at it, and then I found about little next to that big pile, the book that the Arthritis Foundation wrote a couple of years later, very very soon after I published my book, and all the things that they considered quackery back then, they actually were endorsing in their Arthritis Foundation book. What the heck is going on here? How did that happen?
Well, I think, and this is not everyone's perspective, but there was a lot of work that went on under the radar, and I love speaking to mixed groups about this, because as human beings, everybody tends to think that we as holistic medical doctors, or we as environmental doctors, or we as naturopathic doctors, or we as acupuncturists, we're really the guiding, leading thrust in changing our healthcare system and creating this kind of openness, when what was going on was a tremendous sea change inside of our culture that I think has to do with holism in areas well beyond healthcare, where there were, to steal a phrase from a politician, truly a thousand points of light, a lot of different activities to move this this dialogue. And the openness in many mediums is really absolutely unbelievable, if we can recall the perspective that many of us were forced to operate with back in the mid-80s.
Yeah, I remember when I first started, I moved back. Actually, I started the first, one of the first holistic radio shows out in Seattle. You guys helped me start that at KCMU, sponsored by PCC. And I had a lot of people on, but it was very new then. Even though there were veterans of holistic radio, holistic medicine on radio then, it was still fairly new. But I even saw a huge phenomenon being an East Coaster, then moving out west. We didn't have you know, giant consumer co-ops like PCC. You know, Whole Foods wasn't around, Wild Oats wasn't around, Wild by Nature, all these big stores. That all was a phenomenon that happened after the 90s.
I was talking this weekend. I was at a conference in Vancouver, BC, of a multidisciplinary group of a dozen people. It was an invitational look. Interesting at the evolution of these fields, because there was a researcher in Canada trying to figure out if it's time to give up this acronym called CAM, which that stands for Complementary Alternative Medicine, as you know, but nobody much likes. And we were exploring other names, and therefore thinking about all the names through the years that have been applied to these fields. And it's truly come a long ways from the old days where, well, actually in the room there were people saying we need to hold on to alternative. We don't want to move to this language of integrative medicine or integrative healthcare that some prefer. We need to continue to assert that what we're pushing are paradigms and approaches that are, in fact, alternative.
You know, I teach history of natural medicine here at the University of Bridgeport, which is I've been involved with for 15 years. Was one of the guys that kept it from going under when Dr. Sensenig left as the dean. So we kept University of Bridgeport improved it and made it into a strong program here on the East Coast. But, you know, interestingly enough, I find that alternative medicine is really, naturopathic medicine as an entity is certainly making a comeback. But when you look back at the history, you find that the eclectics and the homeopaths and the nature cure, by the way, these were all MDs back in the early, let's say late 1800s, early 1900s. These were all MDs. And the AMA gave them an olive leaf, sort of saying, well, let's make peace. And then, of course, with the Flexner Report and other things that came about then, they basically, I use the analogy of the Borg. You know, like I'm a big Star Trekian fan, like mm-hmm. a lot of folks out there. But they basically assimilated these groups and then annihilated them. What's the problem with this, with integration and then losing your philosophy, losing your roots? It's happened to the osteopaths. It's happened mm-hmm. to many groups. Can you comment on that, John?
Well, I think it's a great question. I mean, one of the ways we see this manifesting, and that there are groups within the integrative medical community that have very different perspectives on them. There is a strong subset. People like Ben Kliegler, mm-hmm. Woody Merrill, who were there at New York Beth Israel, who are the group that's in integrative medicine at Yale. In fact, that has a naturopathic doctor, as you know, is a core director of their integrative medicine program, mm-hmm. Arthur Ali.
Dr. Ali, yeah.
Yeah. And so there is a kind of a split in that group between those who are truly viewing this as an extension of the MD practice and not so thoroughly embracing of other the so-called CAM disciplines like chiropractic, acupuncture, naturopathic medicine, and appreciating them as disciplines, distinct disciplines with distinct value. There is a subset like Dr. Kliegler, Dr. Merrill, who very much see the importance of integration, respecting differences, respecting mm-hmm. pluralism, respecting various values. But there certainly are changes that happen, I would say, necessarily as a profession, for instance, bridges into the third-party payment world, if it chooses to do that. It just seems to, it's an interaction between, as you call it, the Borg and these disciplines that tends to change it.
Yeah.
And I think the only way to strengthen the immune system against untoward change. Now, some of the changes I think are quite good. There's a deeper level of self-reflection and self-knowledge. There's a deeper level of self-scrutiny. I personally have been a very strong advocate for years for these disciplines and practices to promote gathering very good information about the outcomes of what they do.
Yeah.
But to protect themselves from untoward developments relative to integration, the professions have just got to have strong internal immunity to lousy changes, and that comes from engaging internally in self-regulation and in asserting themselves into these processes.
Yeah, I think assertion is very big because, you know, I mean, there's things that I learned in school, you know, back in the 80s or mid-80s, early 80s, that are now coming into fruition now as far as public health measures, wellness measures, and unfortunately, a lot of the, powers that be are taking credit for it, including the allopathic community, as if they thought of these ideas first. Now, I don't really have a problem with that because as long as people are getting better, we can put our own, you know, self-interest mm-hmm. and egos aside. But I just find it ironic that, I find it ironic on your blog that people are looking at this idea of a licensed integrated practitioner. that's kind of, to me, that's kind of scary, because I think it's moving towards, like, again, losing your identity.
I don't think it. No. There's, yeah, I suppose so. There is some movement towards, I think they're calling it some sort of credential. It hasn't moved very much towards a comprehensive medicine or something. The integrative, the business about a licensed integrative practitioner is not so much about a movement state by state to do it. What happened that is fascinating is that in the federal health reform law that passed, there are a number of places, powerful places in that document, where the idea of a integrative healthcare practitioner or integrative health practices it's specifically included. The question for all of our communities is jumping in and defining that, because at one end of it, this could be a medical doctor who from time to time suggests vitamin D, right?
Yeah, at that level, right.
Yeah, and so there's a, from my perspective, the inlay of this language in the federal law is actually a major opportunity for these various disciplines to get together and have an impact. We've never had such an impact as this. You might whine and complain about what the language is and what it might have said, but in fact, in the past, there was no inclusion of this whole idea set of integrative health care in federal law. There are places where licensed complementary alternative medicine providers such as yourself are included where they were never included in the past. So anyone who knows the political process well knows that inclusion in a statute, in a law, is precisely an open door.
Yeah, because then you could change things hopefully later on, but certainly
you can jump in.
Yeah.
You have a requirement really to jump in and get involved in the regulatory process, in figuring out what the regulations are that will define what that legal change means, in figuring out who are going to be on the advisory councils that are going to shape this regulatory process.
Yeah.
And there's opportunity and danger, and whether or not that language manifests itself as changes in law that then begin to change the kinds of access that people have to healthcare practices and providers. It's really a function of, as the poet says, what we get is what we bring. If our fields step up and get involved, let me give you an example, Dr. Z.
Yeah.
Through the Academic Consortium for Complementary Alternative Healthcare, a group with which I work, we recommended to the Institute of Medicine, considered the brains of U.S. medicine, that they consider somebody from the licensed complementary alternative healthcare fields on their planning committee on a new initiative relative to a national pain strategy. In the past, there have not been integrative providers of any sort involved, nor any licensed people, certainly from your fields.
Boy, to really have a dialogue, and not have doctors who are the ones who, start out with this idea. Like, when I went to school, I started out, I wanted to become a naturopathic doctor. It wasn't like a second thought or a life crisis thing because I found that, holistic medicine was the in thing or whatever. And a lot of doctors, not to knock them, but they just take a couple classes in, alternative medicine, or go to a few seminars, and then they hang up their shingle as an alternative medicine doc. That to me is wrong. They're not steeped in the philosophy. Yeah, I like the idea that they're making a shift, but to not have naturopathic doctors or other doctors who are steeped in this type of medicine and really know it backwards, forwards, sideways, and really the only ones that are board certified. As far as I know, besides Chinese doctors, we're the naturopathic doctors, the only ones that take a board in botanical medicine, for instance, and things like that. So anyway, We can go on and on, but I wanted to talk more about some of these initiatives that you have on your blog. By the way, again, if you're just joining us, we're talking to John Weeks, publisher, editor of the Integrator blog. That's news, reports, opinion, networking for the business, education, policy, and practice of integrative medicine, CAM, or integrated healthcare. John was nice enough to join us. But I noticed on the blog, reading it, there's something called the Let's Move Initiative and then the Wellness Initiative for the Nation. Can you comment on those entities? How about the Wellness Initiative?
Yes.
Wellness Initiative for the Nation, I believe that's what the Surgeon General was involved in that.
So this was an initiative that, again, it demonstrates what I was just talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Jonas, he's a medical doctor, a very fine integrative physician, actually, with depth knowledge of a number of practices, including homeopathy, acupuncture. He is now the head of the Samueli Institute in D.C. That group pulled together a coalition to propose that as part of health reform. He saw what was happening with the move towards health reform, and back in 2007 began to move this idea of a depth, multi-agency wellness initiative that appreciated that wellness in our country isn't about something that only the Surgeon General or Health and Human Services is engaged with, but it has to do with the Department of Agriculture's practices, has to do with transportation practices, has to do with decisions inside of our military. A whole array of departments are actually involved in whether or not our communities are healthy. Anyway, they pushed this idea inside of the Obama administration, and it resulted in this movement that was one of the major breakthroughs in that health reform bill, which has established a new council inside of it's underneath the Surgeon General, but includes reps from all these departments. And at this very moment, it's the National Prevention, Health Promotion, and Public Health Council. If you go to the integratorblog.com site, it's right there on the right-hand side. There's an alert relative to it. They're urging comments on this initiative, which is to shape the wellness direction for our nation going forward. Interesting enough here, through Dr. Jonas' work and the Integrated Healthcare Policy Consortium and others, the first four kind of directives about what this council is supposed to do all mention integrative healthcare, an integrative healthcare strategy, or integrative health. This is language that our community inlaid.
Yeah.
Now is the moment to enter into this debate and help Health and Human Services, the Surgeon General, and this group understand what it is. For instance, to you, Dr. Z, I don't think many of these folks get that a good naturopathic practice, by its nature, is wellness creating and health promotion creating. That you have this thing routinely called positive side effects.
That's right.
Whereby addressing the whole person, you're creating a more wellness in that person even as you address the presenting condition.
Right. I mean, you know, when we prescribe flavonoids for varicose veins, we're helping the heart, we're helping the connective tissue, we're helping the macula. I mean, it's like you said, there's good side effects versus just single targeted drugs which deal with one enzyme,
etc. This is the place where, you know, you and I, all of us, have talked about a paradigm shift in healthcare. Well, this is where the rubber is hitting the road here. Historically in the U.S., because conventional medicine as practiced so often is merely reactive and symptom suppressive, most people don't really get that a clinical practice can be part of the wellness and health promotion initiative and what we're talking about. It's incumbent upon us at this moment to actually jump into this dialogue, and anybody can, if you go to my site, look at that article, it'll teach you where to get into and comment on this plan for the nation and make sure we're in there.
We'll talk more about that. We're going to take a quick break, John. I hear the music. So get a drink, get a cup of herb tea, and stay with us as we talk more about preventive medicine, health promotion, of course, the new healthcare reform, and of course I want you to comment on the whole Senate Bill 510 when the FDA controlling food, like Dr. Null was saying. So stay with us. We'll be back with more.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is Karen Hartglass, and I am a vegan. No, I am not an alien from planet Vega. I simply choose to eat plant-based foods. Join me on Ask a Vegan every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking about everything from soup to nuts. Plant-based foods are the healthiest foods to eat, as well as being the most economical, the most compassionate, and the least destructive. If you want to know more about the healthy, planet-friendly, plant-based diet, call in with your questions. Or call in and share your favorite vegan recipes. Tune in on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on www.progressiveradionetwork.com.
Hi, this is Adam Kolker from the Brooklyn Jazz Underground. We're going to be hosting a weekly show every Tuesday at 5 p.m., focusing on sounds coming from the borough of Brooklyn. We'll be playing some new releases, doing live interviews, some live performances, maybe even venture out into music from some of the outer boroughs. Brooklyn Jazz Underground, Tuesday at 5, only on the Progressive Radio Network.
What will be the impact of a Tea Party on the upcoming midterm elections? Who are these Tea Partiers? Are they really only a bunch of right-wing rednecks? Listen in every Thursday night from 7 until 8 Eastern to A More Perfect Union as your host, Bill Thompson, gets the inside stories from actual Tea Party players. Call in with your comments and questions, challenge guests, or show support. A More Perfect Union, Thursday nights, 7 until 8, only on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Okay, we're back with more of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and my guest today is, of course, John Weeks. And John Weeks is the publisher and editor of the Integrator blog, news reports, opinions, and networking for the business education, policy, and practice of integrative medicine. And, of course, John was former director of the AANP, American Association of Naturopathic Physicians, and done a lot of work for Bastyr University in the early days, of which we would have great discussions and talks. And welcome back, John.
Good to be here with you, actually.
Yeah. Well, what about the focus on sickness versus wellness, and particularly in your integrator blog, you talked about the AMA control of the CPT codes, and I think that's very just an amazing piece of work that you did looking at that whole aspect. Tell the listeners out there what a CPT code is for those that don't know, and of course how controlling that information may keep wellness-based alternative practitioners that want to do other procedures and get covered by insurance. How does that stymie that process?
Great question, a fascinating issue. What frankly intrigued me the most as I worked on this was to find how hard it was to discover the information about how much money the AMA makes on this off of the process that was set up back in 1965, that allowed the AMA have control. So the CPT codes are current procedural technology codes. For your listeners out there, basically if a provider is involved in the third party payment arena in the U.S., the way that they get paid is for each diagnosis you use an ICD, it's an ICD-9 code, and you plug that in, and then you plug into your paperwork what procedures it is that you do, or if it's an office call, what sort of an office call, and then if you're performing specific procedures such as using acupuncture needles, doing manipulation, there are codes for those things up to codes for major surgeries of different sorts.
Right, every discipline has its codes, and what we're doing for people, lab work, all lab work, well, I wouldn't say all. much lab work has codes.
Well, that gets right into the issue.
Yeah,
So the story is that the AMA actually owns these codes.
Wow.
And
I didn't know that.
Has done so. So it works a couple of ways here. It means that in order to change a code, create a new code, you have to go through the AMA.
Wow.
If the AMA doesn't agree with you, chances of you getting that code are very, very slim. Or they'll take a whole discipline and decide, well, really all we need are two codes to capture what's important that you do. And so they have an advisory group that includes a naturopathic doctor, includes a chiropractor. I think they've got a massage therapist on it. Dr. Bruce Milliman is the naturopathic physician who's on the advisory group.
Wow.
To it. But again, it's an advisory group, and you've got to go through this AMA-run committee. So let's assume that you believe that there's a value in a code that's for a...
Let's say colonics, John, because I do quite a number of them in my office, and I've been searching high and dry for anything that resembles like a colonic, and there's nothing. There's like removal of impacted feces through surgery, and there's surgical codes, but there's nothing actually which talks about lavaging the colon for other than prior, you know, preparation for surgery.
Well, this could be an example. I don't know if an application has been made. I do believe that because the AMA is in charge, that some of the dialogue around appropriate codes has essentially been stifled. People have felt that, you know, why even try? The other side to this, Dr. Z, is that because they own the codes and everybody has to use them, they get a royalty off of it.
Oh, what?
And the royalty adds up to something in the order of $70 million a year.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
a royalty? So every time you put a bill in there, it's just like... you know, getting a royalty because, you know, somebody quoted your book or played your song on the radio?
That's what we're talking about here.
Wow.
So the awkward reality that this creates is that the AMA, which at this point from a policy perspective doesn't believe that any other practice should have very much independent practice right, if any. This is from nursing through chiropractic to naturopathic doctors. There's a major campaign, in fact, called the Scope of Practice Partnership by the AMA to limit the development of other professions. They fought against naturopathic licensing. They fought against advanced practice nurses.
Yes.
Fought against psychologists having drug prescribing rights. Fought against new midwifery statutes. I know in the state of New York, that was one of their issues. So this agency that's fighting against all of the other disciplines advancing actually makes a makes money off of the use of CPT by all of those disciplines.
Wow.
So they can create a war chest essentially through the money that's provided by the other disciplines.
So how do we stop that, John? Because that's amazing that they're kind of that we have to use their stuff and we can't control our own stuff.
I think it's awareness first. I mean, one of my pleasures as a writer is now if you Google search IOM, CPT, and royalty, you will now find my article there. Right?
Wow, I'm going to have to mention that in my practice management class for my students here. Yeah.
I think it's evidence of the sea change again in U.S. medicine. This was put in place, the control at the sort of Dr. Kildare era of U.S. medicine, when we truly were trusting our doctors much more deeply and trusting them as being the voice. And so therefore, if they were the voice, then by gosh, let's give them control of coding.
Wow.
The evolution.
Instead of many voices, right?
Instead of many voices. And now we're moving into a multidisciplinary world. Part of what provoked my piece was there was a study about nursing that is promoting, this is a major study out of the Institute of Medicine with support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, promoting nurses in independent practice as a major part of meeting our primary care need. And
my wife's a nurse. She would agree with that. I mean,
and so immediately when this report came out on the 5th of October, the AMA sent their own release out saying that while there's much good in this report, we simply don't agree with the nurses having this kind of independence.
Mm.
And so, again, these nurses are involved in using these codes, and there's 3.3 million of them out there involved in using these codes. And the money that goes as a royalty to the AMA can turn around and be used to keep the nurses from advancing. So we may be approaching a time when there could be a multidisciplinary effort to say that was then, this is today. Can we sue them
for, sort of creating a monopoly or something like that? I mean, it sounds preposterous that they control this information, and why can't we use other, create a whole code for integrative medicine, and then we control that? I mean,
There was an effort to do that back starting in the mid-90s with the ABC codes. I'm not sure if you're
familiar. I kind of heard about it, yeah.
Alternative Link, I was just back in touch with them around this subject. We'll soon post their kind of response to this whole article. They just sent it to me. But I think the leverage is through our government again, because this wouldn't be happening. Because of the close relationship between the AMA and Medicare and Medicaid services, that there's a shared interest in use of the CPT, and I think it's our leverage point is actually with our government agencies.
Right, because the insurance companies are involved with that. Of course, the Medicare, Medicaid, they kind of set some of the standards, I guess, of reimbursement for some of these codes. That's the other thing too, is they just took in Connecticut here, some of the insurance companies just said, well, we're just not going to reimburse naturopathic doctors the same way that other general practitioners are reimbursed for similar services, first office calls and whatever, which was kind of tough on the profession, that's for sure. So they could turn around, I guess, and make these changes in the reimbursement schedule.
That's right. I mean, the relationship with the insurers is something that each profession has just got to keep working on. Is this something that just happened in Connecticut?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Well, I mean, there got to be negotiations at a variety of levels. I am a strong... I've checked around with folks who might have the clout to begin to raise the issue about the AMA's CPT ownership, and unfortunately, I don't feel like there's much momentum to take it on. They just feel like the AMA is yet so very powerful. This really shameful aspect of this is that the AMA at this moment reflects, it has as its members only 17% of the doctors. So we not only have put this power into one guild's hand, the wielding of the power is being done by less than one-fifth of the doctors in that guild. It just is not appropriate that that subset of one guild have this much authority. The other side of this is that actually it's a different mechanism, but the AMA has a committee that again, this is the Wall Street Journal just wrote up a piece about this. They have a committee, the AMA does, of 29 docs that meets, I think, four times a year. They make recommendations to Medicare about how Medicare is to distribute its funds, basically discipline to discipline. And Medicare apparently accepts 90% of these recommendations, meaning that essentially AMA is in the driver's seat of that.
Wow.
Dispersal process as well. I think personally that both of these issues are necessary to address if we want to have true health care reform in our country. I don't see momentum right now amongst the stakeholders who are not the AMA to actually take them on. But I guess information is the first step.
Well, that's the first step, is making us aware of these things, John. I mean, one of my patients just commented just a few days ago. They said, boy, wouldn't it be great if massage... He said, you know, one of the best things we can do for health care is that more people get massages, because it's such a powerful healing modality. People feel great. As we get more and more patients with arthritis and rheumatism, as baby boomers get old, more and more people are going to need this modality or other. And it's interesting that, yeah, you're right. You can go to a physical therapist and get physical therapy, but if you go to a licensed massage therapist, and many times it's not covered under your plan. These are things that I think is, again, that focus on sickness versus wellness type of model.
I think, yeah, it is. And again, in this new law, there is the Federal Health Reform Act, the Patient Protection and Affordable Health Care Act, that was pushed through in the last session. There is language in that bill that creates non-discrimination amongst provider groups, which essentially would say that if you, as a licensed practitioner, have a certain procedure in your scope, that if the insurer covers that procedure, they cannot discriminate among different types of providers. So if they would cover a massage by a physical therapist, for instance,
yeah,
they couldn't deny that if it was provided by a massage therapist. So I said there's some big changes that are right in the law that have, in my view, move the dialogue from a complaint about maybe not being included to an actual on-the-ground real opportunities to participate. And now the onus is truly on naturopathic doctors, acupuncturists, integrative medical doctors, massage therapists, everybody who's involved in and interested in holism to step up and participate. You know, we stepped up with the Institute of Medicine on that pain panel, and we educated them, and they ended up naming Rick Marinelli, a naturopathic physician and an acupuncturist, to that committee. First time ever for a provider from either of those fields to be participating in one of these major federal policy committees in medicine.
Super important, yeah.
But it's a function of stepping up, and I would say I think the charge right now is really on the integrated practice fields to I urge your listeners to go to ihpc.info. It's integrated healthcare policy consortium.info. This is the main coalition that is working on making sure that they help put these changes in the law, and now they're working on getting the right people on committees and getting understandings of what this language changes mean. It's a grassroots and institutional effort combined, and I urge your folks to go and take a look and get on their alert sign up. Again, it's ihpc.info. It's the Integrated Healthcare Policy Consortium.
I think our friend Sheila Quinn was involved with that, right?
Sheila was the chair for many years. Absolutely.
From Bastyr
yes.
College days. It's great to
exactly.
hear.
Exactly. Pamela
what
Snyder.
Doing.
What's nice about this is you've got leaders from across the licensed complementary alternative healthcare disciplines, from integrative medicine. The University of Maryland leadership has been involved in funding key initiatives. It's really quite a sterling group of people who have strong relationships with Senator Harkin, Senator Mikulski, Senator Hatch, a variety of people. Again, it's our job, however, to play. And I mean, that's the game of politics, is you got to show up.
Yeah, very good. Well, we're going to make it a point to have you on more regularly to do like a little segment on our shows, John, so that we
I'd be happy to do it.
Just to call you up for 5 minutes.
I just like listening to your accent.
Yeah. So I guess in the last few minutes, anything else that we want to touch base with the new law that's going on now?
What
I mean, we hear from always if people, most Americans watch television, unfortunately, and they're watching right wing controlled television, who are always putting down quote unquote Obamacare, but they really don't really get into the nitty gritty of where they can actually read what this document, the good things about it, and you know this obviously compromises with any piece of legislation. But what would you recommend to the listeners out there who still are confused? They hear because you were just bombarded by the right wing about, you know, that this is not a good piece of legislation and blah, blah, blah.
So
what's your final comments on that?
Here's a good starting point, and then the final comment will be about education. If a person goes to my site, and this is just to educate yourself about what's in there relative to this world that you inhabit, and if you scroll down below where my face is there's something called Integrator Resources, and the second one down is entitled Reference Guide Language and Sections on CAM and Integrative Practice in HR 3590 Healthcare Overhaul. If you click in there and scroll down, you'll see that there are opportunities relative to our emerging workforce, relative to our research strategy, relative to our wellness and health strategy, relative to our access via payment, and access via this new medical home model, where our fields are for the first time embedded.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. People can have any issues that they want about the rest of the act, but there is no question that in terms of respect for what this movement has been through the years, this bill has more opportunity in it. It has a tremendous amount of opportunity in it. I urge folks to go get educated and then pay attention. I think, you know, the integrator, I am one of the main sources of regular information on what's going on, how to participate. Integrated Healthcare Policy Consortium, ihpc.info is another.
I see. Yeah, I could see. And then there's even a link to what's called CAPWIS, where people could, you know, take action right away if they feel like there's you know, some type of a critical issue that they want to facilitate and shoot off an email to such and such on federal policy, you have the capability to do that on your site there.
Exactly.
So
it links
great.
You through IHPC.
All right, John, I hear the music, so just give us your website again. And again, I'm going to invite you on very soon to talk about this on a regular fashion, that's for sure.
Sounds good, Dr. Z. It's www.theintegratorblog.com. Thanks. Been a pleasure.
Yeah, and take care of yourself. Good to hear
you
from
too.
You and see
all
you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. See you.
And that does it for this edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We're really excited to bring you this information on a regular basis. Myself and Dr. Kamai, on behalf of us, we want you to stay healthy. Bye-bye.